Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Workshop Wednesday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Catholic Answers apologist, Trent Horn, and I'm glad that you were able to join me this week. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. Those of you who are veterans to the podcast, I am very glad you're able to be with us as well today. If you are new, Workshop Wednesday is just the time where I invite people to step into my metaphorical workshop, step in with me here at the Office of Catholic Answers. You get to know a little bit more of what I'm doing and get to see what life is like around here. And today, really, what I'm working on now, my wife asked me, what do you do on Workshop Wednesday when you're doing a podcast? You tell people, here on Workshop Wednesday for this podcast, I'm making a podcast. Let's talk more about that. And in a future show, I might talk more about podcasting itself, because this is turning into, now that we're doing a daily show, about, you know, maybe 20 to 25% of what I'm doing here at Catholic Answers, which includes preparing the show, you know, doing the research. Because, I mean, what I try to do with these podcasts, I try to draw in a lot of different content for people. I don't want it to just be me spitballing for 30 minutes, whatever pops into my head. I want to find useful things that will help build you up and edify you so you can share and explain and defend your faith to other people. And then, of course, now that it's a daily podcast, that's, you know, 2.5 to 3 hours of content every week that I'm able to record here in the Catholic Answers studio, which now that I'm recording so many episodes, I come into the studio here very early in the morning. Not that early. Early is 5 a.m. when my children are up and about and would enjoy my company. No, you know, I come in earlier into the office when there's not many people here in our G.K. Chesterton Catholic Answers studio to come and record these episodes for you. So I've been working on podcasts right now. Another thing that I'm working on that I want to talk about, being my main focus of the show today, is the issue of education. So right now I am finishing up this semester at the University of Mary. So along with doing my work here at Catholic Answers to create materials that will build people up and help them defend the faith, I also have to build myself up. Being an apologist, being someone who studies the faith and defends it, it's always a continual process of edification. And I was joking around with this with Jimmy Akin, thinking like, oh, I wish I could, you know, just get to the point where you are. You've learned so much. And he says, I'm always learning. I'm always stretching myself. And I mean, there's just so much to know when it comes to, when you get to especially complicated or very specific issues of defending the faith. And that's where it's hard. Being a Catholic apologist, you have to be kind of a jack of all trades if you want to be one that is successful and really equipping a lot of people. So you have to have, like when I sit around and talk with Jimmy, you know, we can talk about ancient history, cutting edge science like physics, quantum physics, cosmology, and where science and philosophy intersect, like the philosophy of time or space. And then going over to linguistics, looking at things like ancient Greek or ancient Hebrew. Other aspects of history, like more modern history, European history, literary studies. There's even things like economics and politics come into the fray. So there's a lot of different things you have to learn. So if you want to be someone who is able to share and defend our faith, part of that involves not just understanding our faith, but understanding the world as a whole, understanding other belief systems, whether it's atheism, which is, I guess, is a lack of a belief system, or other forms of secularism, deism, a generic belief in God that's out there but doesn't, you know, it's very anti-religious, or other religions such as Protestantism, Judaism, Eastern. Now, Protestants, of course, are Christians. It's just another denomination. But you also have things like Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses. You've got the whole gamut. So there's a lot to learn about. And don't fret. Don't fret at all. You know, it's like the old adage, how do you eat an elephant? You do it one bite at a time. One thing I say to myself sometimes when I'm studying the faith, and, you know, people will say to me, oh, can you read this book? How do I answer this person? Or I'll pick up in front of me a large book written by someone who is opposed to the faith. It might be a 300-page book saying the Catholic Church was not established by Jesus Christ. It could be a 400-page book written by David Boonen that is a defense of abortion, very intricate and thought out. It could be a 700-page book arguing that Jesus never existed. And you can look through these things, and I look through these things. Sometimes this might happen to you. Maybe it's a video, someone shows you an article online, and you can get overwhelmed. seeing like all of the objections and arguments that can be raised against our faith. You feel overwhelmed, like, oh, I don't have all the answers for this. You may not have all the answers right now, but the answers are there. And when I'm faced with this, like when I have a 500-page book in front of me of someone trying to answer the faith, I always say to myself, I say, it's not Hilbert's Hotel. You'll be able to get through this. I know that that's a pretty obscure reference for most of you, but let me go back a little bit. David Hilbert was a famous mathematician, I believe, in the early 20th century, and he proposed a thought experiment about infinity. William Lane Craig uses this thought experiment in his arguments for why the past could not have been infinitely long, or why the past is not eternal and the universe had a beginning. And the thought experiment is Hilbert's Hotel. The idea is this: imagine if there were a hotel with an infinite number of rooms, a real hotel with an infinite number of rooms. What would that be like? Well, with normal infinite sets, you can do something called transfinite arithmetic, where you can add and subtract different infinite quantities, like what is all the infinite number, all the even numbers plus all the odd numbers. You know, it's both infinite. You just have different infinities you're working with infinite arithmetic. But there's certain rules. Just like in regular math, you can't divide by zero, for example. Your calculator just gives you an error. You're not allowed to subtract infinite sums because you get different answers and it's contradictory. In math, you're just not allowed to do that. But imagine you had a real hotel, real Hilbert's Hotel, infinite number of rooms. How many people, let's say all the rooms are occupied in Hilbert's Hotel, and everybody in an even-numbered room checks out. Okay, how many people are still left in the hotel? Infinite, because all the odd-numbered rooms are still occupied. But what happens if everyone in a room greater than five checks out of Hilbert's Hotel? So you got a hotel with infinite rooms. Everyone whose room key says it's greater than five on it checks out. How many people are left? There's five people in the hotel. But wait, you have infinity minus infinity equals infinity, and another case where infinity minus infinity equals five. That doesn't work. You can't have actual infinities in real life, including actually infinite past. Now, I know there are objections to how Craig uses this in his defense of the Kalam argument. Ed Fazer actually raised an objection to this on his blog. It's a subject for another time. I just bring it up because that image of the infinite hotel has always stuck with me, you know, Hilbert's Hotel. And so when these objections to the faith are raised, I just remind myself I don't have to trudge through an infinite number of them. They are finite. It may take a while to get through them. I can get through them, or to be efficient, I'm able to research and find other people who have gotten through them. And so that's really what education is all about. I remember when I first started studying philosophy in college, my love for philosophy began at Scottsdale Community College, home of the Fighting Artichokes. The legend has that the student government was mad at the athletic team because they weren't getting enough the student government was not getting enough funding. So they voted to have the mascot change, the absolute worst mascot you could think of, and that was an artichoke. Because then when they chanted, the team would have to say choke a lot. So that's where I went. RD Artichokes, our mascot, Scottsdale Community College. 18 years old, fresh out of high school, taking my first philosophy class. Professor Anfinson, I believe, was her name. And I fell in love with philosophy just right there, right off the bat. And I love those seeing in philosophy classes. When you see someone in an introductory chemistry class, you don't have a student telling the teacher, well, here's how chemistry really should be. The students don't lecture the teacher on chemistry and intro chemistry. The students usually don't lecture the professor on economics and intro economics. Maybe they try to, but at least in the hard sciences, you realize you're in over your head. But in philosophy, you get people say, well, what about this? Well, maybe everything's not real at all. And it's so amazing in an introductory philosophy class, or people I just speak with in general online, or, you know, when I go to college campuses, who say, well, I have an idea. And they think that it's just like this amazing idea that nobody's ever thought of before. And odds are somebody has thought of it. So when you study philosophy, like I studied philosophy, I minored in philosophy in my undergrad. I have a master's degree in philosophy now, and I'm completing my master's degree in bioethics. That when people study, you know, they think, oh, I've got all these great ideas. But the more you get into it, you see, oh, that idea I had, that guy thought of that. Everything's just a dream. Rene Descartes thought of that. And then this guy had what about this objection? Well, that guy thought of that objection. So the more the idea that you go through and study is that you see a lot of it's just catching up with where everybody has been, seeing where arguments have been taken to. And then once you get there, to get the to really advance the field, you can earn a doctorate if you can, okay, the argument or my field has gone this far, I'm going to take it an extra step. I'm going to take it an extra step and I'm going to go this way. And so I'm going to have a very, very specialized education and add to the field of knowledge this very, very specialized, unique bit of knowledge to the collective knowledge of humanity as a whole. That's the idea behind getting a PhD. So people ask me, you know, Trent, are you going to get your PhD? I mean, I'm finishing my third master's degree right now. Am I going to get a PhD? Should you go back to school? Should you get a PhD? Those are questions I want to answer on the show today, because I believe that for us to explain and defend our faith, we have to be educated both in our faith and in the world as a whole. So I do think education has value, but sometimes it's overvalued, or the kinds of education people promote are not a great idea. I'm very, very skeptical of it. So first, for myself, am I going to get a PhD? Maybe. My wife and I have had conversations about this back and forth. Sometimes we get in the mood, you can never go on getting an education, or I'll say, that's it, I'm not doing school anymore, because it encroaches on my personal life. Even though I'm able to do some of it here at the office, I end up doing a lot of studying at home. And so it encroaches in on my personal life, and I have little kids and I want to spend time with them. But then again, while they're little, maybe it's good to knock out education while they're little, so that, you know, they're not going to remember daddy was studying all this much, instead of daddy having to leave their little league game because he's got to go to England to defend his dissertation. Also, when it comes to PhDs, it's very limited. It's a very limited range of what you can do. I actually applied while I was studying I was in Phoenix, Arizona. When I was in Phoenix working remotely for Catholic Answers, when I was there, I thought about getting a PhD. And you know what's great? When God doesn't give you what you want. So thank God sometimes when your prayers are not answered. In fact, I think we should always do that. I told my wife, I said, maybe I should get a PhD. So I just applied to Arizona State University. That's where I went for my BA. I studied philosophy there. I still knew maybe one or two of the professors. I went, I got everything together, and I actually was not admitted into the program. I mean, maybe I'm just not all that smart, although I did take the GREs, and on the writing section, I scored. The GREs are basically the SATs for college students if you want to get into grad school. I took that, and I scored in the 99th percentile for writing. So I guess being a professional writer helps you in that regard. And so I think I had everything together, but you know, I haven't spent the last 4 years trying to get into a PhD program, and other students have. So I'm sure probably the limited number of slots they have went to them. Now, I could apply to other schools, you know, other schools here in the U.S., and you might be thinking, maybe you'd like to get a PhD. Would you want to become an expert in some field related to the faith? And I say, if you feel called to that, God bless you. You should do it. But as Jesus said when he told the parable about the tower, count the cost. Count the cost that is involved. So when you get a PhD, if you are married or have children, that will significantly, you're going to be giving up 4 or 5 years of your life just doing school, going to classes, and then working on your dissertation. And you might have to relocate. You might not be able to get into a school that is nearby you, or the school you really need to study at, maybe on the other side of the country. Are you willing to uproot your family? I'm not. So if I can't get into something local, I'm not willing to do that. Now, there are a few distance PhD programs. There are a few distance programs. There's some in South Africa. I know someone who got a PhD in New Testament studies through a school in South Africa, and they're reputable. These are, watch out for diploma mills. I know some people, their name, they shall remain nameless. You might know who I'm talking about. There's a few people like this who say they have a PhD, that, and they'll call themselves Dr. So-and-so. But then when you look, you see where their PhD comes from. It comes from an unaccredited school, or it comes from what's called a diploma mill. So it's just something that was set up basically in like some guy's basement or, you know, some office downtown, say, oh yeah, we have a university, but there's very, very minimal coursework. You don't have to go through a lot of peer review or rigorous defense of a dissertation. You can do maybe a summer's worth of work and then you get a title of PhD, but it's unaccredited. So it doesn't mean anything. And so that's why I, out of conscience, do not refer to those people as Dr. So-and-so, because they have not earned the title. and they water it down for everybody else. So if you're looking at a PhD one, make sure the school you go to is accredited. Make sure it's legitimate. The one in South Africa I'm talking about, I think it's where Mike Lacona went. He's a Protestant apologist. It's accredited. I've thought about going to the University of Maryvale in England. That is part of the Liverpool school there. It's accredited. I know in America, some people look down on British research PhDs, but they are legitimate PhDs. These are not diploma mills by any means. And I know several Catholics who have gone that route. So that's something that I am seriously considering. It's something you might seriously consider. Now, if you want to be an now for me, that's just to get a PhD. I think it's a PhD in Catholic studies. If you want to get a expert or terminal degree in theology, so you know, if you say to yourself, I want to be a theologian, there's a very specific degree you have to get for that. Usually it's a licentiate or more especially a sacred theology doctorate, which has the very unfortunate acronym STD. So if you want to get your license, your credentials to be a theologian, you got to get an STD. It is hard. That's one reason I thought about not getting a sacred theology doctorate, so I don't have to hear that joke 8 million times. But that, so some people, they'll say to me, oh, this, I get introduced at events like Trent Horn is a theologian. I'm like, I think Alexa, right, Amazon's Alexa or Google Echo, if you ask them who Trent Horn is, I think they used to say Trent Horn is a theologian and Catholic apologist. And I hear people introduce me that way, and I say, no, I'm not a theologian. I have a master's degree in theology, but you really have to have a sacred theology doctorate, a licentiate in sacred theology to study at a Catholic university. That's what makes you a theologian. I would say that I could use the term scholar. I mean, I'm fine with Catholic apologist who has graduate level education. So for yourself, if you want to learn about the faith and you want to do it in a systematic way, doing an online master's degree would probably be a way to go. And when people come and talk to me about this, I always give them the same advice. If you can do it without getting into debt, do it. Absolutely. Here's what's hard, though, about learning, and people are different. Now, I am a very unique, odd individual, and I mean, well, I guess if you listen to the podcast long enough, you've probably been able to pick that up, and you see that what I choose to talk about on Free For All Friday. But I am kind of an autodidact. An autodidact is somebody who can teach themselves. So I was sitting here talking with Chris Check about all the strengths of the employees here in the office. And I said, well, Jimmy Akin's strength is he's really good at just getting really good at stuff. Like Jimmy actually helps with a lot of our fundraising. And he's very knowledgeable at that because Jimmy is an autodidact. He is really good at teaching himself things. And you may know people in your life who they don't respond well when someone tries to teach them. They just open a book and they can learn themselves. That's an autodidact tendency. And that's kind of where more of what I am. It's hard for me. I don't respond well to learning when it comes to listening. That's why I have a hard time with listening to lectures. I do a lot better if I can just sit and read a book, and that sticks with me a lot longer. So that's what I am. And so when it comes to learning theology or learning things, an easy way for me to learn is just by kind of reading. Now, sometimes education programs are helpful because they give you, well, here's what you should read, and then you're tested on it to make sure you really are understanding the concepts. And I've been benefiting from that right now at the University of Mary, working on my master's degree in bioethics. So I'm at like the last class this semester. I'm just trying to get through the last modules before Christmas break. And then after that, it's one more class and then my final capstone project. And then I really would like a break from school for a little bit. I think 3 masters is fine for a while. So however, if you're like most people, you benefit by having someone else show you the way, basically. Someone to break down a complex subject, be able to answer questions, and show you a path forward. Now, you may not be able to relocate or move to go to school, and you don't want to get into debt. Absolutely, especially if you're studying theology, do not get into debt. Don't do that. So what should you do instead? Well, you can consider an online master's program. I like those a lot. My favorite ones, disclaimer, I teach at Holy Apostles College, but Holy Apostles has a great online master's in theology and philosophy. I don't know many other online master's degrees in philosophy, so that's a good one you can check out. If you go to Holy Apostles, you can enroll in my class. I have a class coming next semester. It's called Moral Apologetics. It's how to use principles of reason to defend the church's teachings on morality, especially life issues and sexual morality. Franciscan University of Steubenville is great, where my alma mater, where I got my master's in theology. Augustine Institute is also an excellent school. So those are three just right off the top of my head. And I know there's a few others. I can't remember them immediately. There's Catholic Distance University is another. What's great about them is you can do them at your own pace. You can usually have interaction with other students. Oh, University of Mary. You know, I'm in that right now as a master's degree in bioethics. They've got some other distance programs, I believe. What's great is that usually you can have interaction with students. You can watch lectures. Professors will interact with you with somewhat and guide you in your programs. And it's a great way to learn if you want guided education. It's also helpful when it comes to just getting degrees and meeting our degree culture. That is something that I have a hard time with right now. That people say to me, well, I want to study theology. What should I do? I'll tell them, well, here's what you should do. Read the Catechism and read the New Testament over and over and over again. Then read these parts of canon law, and you'll know a lot more than about 90% of other people. This is the challenge. Whenever I meet people at events, when I go and speak, and actually I've thought about creating a resource, a book or an app related to this. They say, how do I learn my faith? I give them this challenge. Here's the challenge I give to you. Read one chapter of the New Testament, Monday through Friday. Give yourself a break on weekends. Read one chapter of the New Testament a night and 10 paragraphs of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's about, I don't know, 2,600 paragraphs in the Catechism, about 260 chapters in the New Testament. And that's about how many Monday through Fridays we have, how many days out of a year that are not weekends. Take the weekend off, relax, or catch up on the weekend if you couldn't do your reading during the week. But if you do one chapter of the New Testament and 10 paragraphs of the Catechism, you do that in a year, you'll have learned the vast majority of our faith and be very good at least explaining what we believe. And the Catechism actually has decent apologetics, decent defenses of the faith within it. You can see it's the paragraphs in the Catechism that are in smaller font. They're usually more theological notes or apologetic notes. So that's how you learn. So why would you need to go to get an education? Well, you can go more in depth and learn about what other authors and theologians have said about our faith. So that's important. But honestly, in the culture we live in today, you have to go and get an education just so you can get through the door, especially if the reason you want to learn more about the faith. Now, whoever you are, you might have a regular job. You might be driving a truck. You might be a teacher, a nurse, a lawyer. You might have your regular job. You just want to learn to edify yourself. And if that's the case, I would say get a bunch of podcasts and then read the Bible and the Catechism. And there you go. You can even get some free courses from Catholic universities online or get them to the teaching company. But be careful. Be sure to get, you know, Orthodox ones, obviously, you know, faithful ones. You can learn. But if you want to make teaching the faith, if you want to make teaching the faith or defending the faith something like a full-time profession or something where people bring you out, like to be a speaker, for example, you want to go and you speak or you want to have, you know, expand your influence with others, getting a degree in theology or philosophy from a Catholic university is very helpful because it opens doors. It helps the gatekeepers to see that you're trustworthy. It's hard because I don't like that. I believe people should be judged on the merits of what they know. And what's hard is we live in a culture where degrees have become essentially a signaling device. That's what Brian Kaplan, he's a professor at George Mason University, calls degrees. They're signaling devices. So people go to school, not necessarily even, that's what I don't like, especially at regular universities. People go to a university just to learn things, not to learn. They primarily go to get a degree to prove to people they've met some kind of arbitrary test so they can be hired. You have jobs for personal assistance that say requires a bachelor's degree. Why? Do you need it? Did you go to answering the phone 101 your freshman year of college? Did you go organizing day planner was a part, you know, since sophomore year at university? You didn't study any of that stuff. And, you know, at colleges, a lot of times, especially at public universities and private ones, frankly, too, you study oddball classes. You just say, that looks like fun to me. And you learn. I mean, you learn a lot of interesting stuff that might help you at pub trivia or if you're watching Jeopardy with people. But it's a lot of that, 90% of it's not useful if you go into a very specific job field. So why do you go? Well, the idea is, well, it shows you're a hard worker and I can trust you. Well, look, I went to Arizona State University. We were the number one party school for like 5 years until some school here in California stole the title from us. I went there. There were people who worked very hard. There were people who were working hard, and there were people who were hardly working. They were working really hard at getting their tan on the lawn in front of the library there, you know, or whatever they were doing, going to the Sun Devil games, things like that. So no, it's from a romanticized time, I think a lot of employers have, when college was something very few people went to. Few people went to college. So if you got into college, you were a smart person. You worked really hard. Now everyone's basically expected to go to college, even if it's not a great idea for them. That's why I like Brian Kaplan's book, The Case Against Education, where education for an individual is often a good idea. But if all of us get educated, suddenly the education's not worth much anymore. It's like if you go to a concert. If you go to a concert and one person stands up to get a better view, it works for him. But if everybody stands up, suddenly nobody has a better view. Same thing with degrees. You had to have a high school diploma. Now that doesn't mean anything. You need a bachelor's degree. And now has become a point where the bachelor's degree is the new high school diploma. You need a master's. So if you want a job at a Catholic school, a Catholic diocese, if you want to be a speaker who's invited out more and you have just a good credential for you, I recommend getting that master's degree in theology. But I recommend you do it without getting into debt. I feel so bad. This breaks my heart when I hear people who went and studied theology at a university and got high five figure, six figure level debt. And then they go and they become a theology teacher. You know, they have $100,000 in debt, $150,000 in debt. They're making $30,000 a year as a theology teacher, maybe 40 if they're lucky. What are they supposed to do? Or they're working at a parish, RE. They're working for a diocese. Maybe they're making, you know, 40 or 50 at a diocese. And they got a mountain of debt behind them. Don't do it. Don't do it. If you are in a ton of debt, I recommend, I like Dave Ramsey a lot. He's someone I follow a lot for financial planning and budgeting advice. I don't follow him like, you know, he's dear beloved leader. I think he's wrong about some things or he oversells some things. But I think in general, what he talks about when it comes to debt is right. And so staying out of debt is so incredibly important. And if you want to go and study education and you want to learn about, you know, about the Catholic faith, do so in a way that doesn't get you into a lot of debt. That's why I'm excited at Catholic Answers. We're going to be starting our School of Apologetics very soon. We actually already filmed the first course with Jimmy Akin. And so that is just kind of a general introduction to defending the faith. And more courses are going to go online. So like this course I teach at Holy Apostles on moral apologetics, that is going to be eventually here. We'll teach it as a course. Either I or another apologist will teach it. And if you go through our program, ideally, if you go through our program at an ideal point, you would be able to take those credits to a place like Franciscan University or the University of Mary. And you'd be able to earn 12 credits. 9 or 12 credits in a very inexpensive way that moves you through your education. One way I did that with the University of Mary, if you want to learn about bioethics, even if you're just interested in the subject, like you want to learn about what does the Catholic Church teach specifically about end-of-life care or about organ donation or about reproductive technology, infertility technology, what's okay, what's not okay. The National Catholic Bioethics Center has a certificate you can get in Catholic healthcare ethics and bioethics. And it's you just do a opening seminar. You travel to Philadelphia or Phoenix or wherever they host it for a weekend. You do the online coursework once a week. And then at the end, you go to Philadelphia for the final capstone. It's a great program. And if you do it, you can transfer 12 credits to the University of Mary to get a master's degree in bioethics if you want to go that route, which is the route that I have gone. And so I did that with National Catholics Bioethics Center, studying under Father Tad Boholcek, the other ethicists there. And they, you know, I mean, people say, well, why would you go? You know a lot. Yeah, I mean, I know a fair amount, but I always learn from other people. Here's the thing. As an apologist, I recognize I'm a jack of all trades. I cannot be an expert in everything. Nobody can be an expert in everything. So that's why I try, when I have a question about something, I try to go find an expert in that. So I might send an email to Father Tad or someone at NCBC on a bioethics question. If I have a question about something unique in an ancient Greek lexicon, I might email someone I know who teaches ancient Greek or knows ancient Hebrew, like someone like Brant Petrie, who's one of the foremost experts, I think, on ancient Hebrew and Hebrew biblical studies in the Catholic world right now. So that's one of the benefits of education. When you find those people who are experts and try to, you know, absorb through osmosis their knowledge from them. So that's why even if you are an autodidact like me and you learn a lot on your own, and I think that's great. You have to keep learning, especially even just general things like literature, history, culture. And it's important to learn that because I remember watching debates with Christopher Hitchens, the late Christopher Hitchens, one of the famous four atheists with, you know, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris. And he passed away, I think, in 2011. But when he did debates and when he spoke, Hitchens was very effective because he could cite history, make literary references, and people, he had this confidence about him and knowledge of the world that people really appreciated. And so they trusted him, I think, seeing him as a learned individual who was cultured, who could apply his knowledge of culture to try to denigrate the faith. So what we need is someone, we need people who understand the way the world is. So when people say to me, well, oh, haven't you ever heard about this? Haven't you ever heard about this in philosophy or this in history? To be able to say, oh, yeah, I've heard about that, but here's why it doesn't contradict with the Catholic faith. So anytime that we can grow in useful knowledge is helpful, you know, to be able to do that. So onward, Christian soldiers, let us continue to grow in our knowledge and always to do that in prayer, to ask the Lord to come into our hearts, to open our hearts so that we can continue to do his will. And so that when we read and we study, we're doing it with not just the light of human reason, but the light of divine revelation and the Holy Spirit working through us so we have a greater understanding of what we're reading. I'll leave you with one last thought. C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity once said that what we need are not little books, more little books on why be Christian. He said what we need are Christians to write all the big books on science and history. And he said, what would be more convincing to you to become Hindu? If you went to the bookstore and saw a bunch of little books saying, here's why be Hindu, or when you went to the bookstore and you saw all the books on science and philosophy and history were written by Hindu scholars, that would make you a lot more, oh, Hinduism must really have something to it. These guys are the ones who are all putting out expert things. So while you might want to be educated in the faith, and I do agree that's important, even just becoming an expert in anything, if you are an expert in that field and you allow your Catholic faith to shine through, so they say, oh, you know, the best people that do even this technical field, the best people in this field in university studies, they're Catholics. If you look in law, for example, many of the most important, you know, most Supreme Court justices are Catholic. You know, I might put question mark over that for some of them. But people see that and say, oh, Catholics, because of their natural law tradition, they're some of the brightest legal scholars in the country. There must be something to Catholicism. That, I think, can be the most helpful, that even if you study something that is not related to the faith, become the best you can at it and then let your faith shine through it and not be afraid of saying, yeah, I'm a Catholic lawyer. I'm a Catholic economist. I'm a Catholic business leader. And my faith informs and motivates what I do. And that if we do that, then I think we will have a greater influence through both education, whether it's religious education or vocational. So keep getting educated, and I hope you will help us here at the Council of Trent podcast. You guys have been great, and have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.